In this week's episode, Jenny Stone and Katie Singer discuss the key differences between being employed versus self-employed. They look at how you can determine the difference and what common pitfalls there are with clients not following the correct guidance.
Accountancy on Prescription by RBP, one of the leading firms of medical specialist accountants. We know what you find tough, but don't you worry, as we know our stuff.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Accountancy on Prescription. I'm Jenny Stone, one of the partners at RBP, and I'm joined today with Katie Singer, and we're going to be discussing the difference between being employed and self-employed. And this is more from a point of view of an employer when you're looking to take on staff, whether you've got to determine their employment status. Katie, how are you today?
I'm all right, thank you, Jenny. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. This is obviously something that comes up an awful lot in our conversations when we're going around to see our clients. We did actually record a podcast episode on this back in April 24, headed up off payroll working, but I know I'm constantly asked about this. So I have clients where they're looking to take on, maybe in an ideal role, they want a salary GP, but they have a GP that comes to them and says to them, oh, I want to be paid as self-employed. And they'll often just email me and go, Jenny, can we pay them as self-employed? So it might be worth just starting with, Katie, what is the difference between being employed and being self-employed?
Absolutely. So I think one of the key things to take away is this decision, the choice, it's not the individual's or even yours. It is the government's. You either are employed or you're self-employed. And so what we're going to sort of chit-chat about is the ways that one works out whether they are employed or self-employed. And as you can imagine from the fact that we're recording a podcast about it, it can be a little bit grey. And as we get into it and some of the things we're going to discuss, it is almost borderline. It could go either way. But fundamentally, very simply put, if you're employed, very simply, you're on a payroll. It's as straightforward as that. You know, if you are listening and you're an individual, you know, if you've got a job where you are paid on a payroll, the tax, the pension, etc., is deducted at source and you're given a net pay at the end of the month. Along with being an employee, you have lots of employee rights. Obviously, we're not HR consultants, so I can't run you through everything, but you're entitled to holiday pay and sick pay, and you're a staff member. So, you benefit from all the statutory government staff benefits.
Yeah, getting invited to the Christmas party and the staff barbecue because you're a member of staff.
Exactly that. So that one is, I would say, the easy one. Being self-employed is where essentially you are paid off a payroll. You're not on the company or the business's payroll or the practice's payroll. You would invoice the practice or the employer, and they would pay you what we call gross, which is nothing is deducted from this amount of money. If your invoice says £5,000, you are paid £5,000, and it is your responsibility to report this money to the tax man. Now, if you're an employee, you may still be required to do a tax return. This isn't what this conversation's about. But of course, when you declare your salary, you literally just declare your salary. You don't need to worry about working out taxes, working out anything. It's all been done for you. Self-employed, of course, the onus is on the individual, whether you're doing that tax return yourself or whether you're getting an accountant to do it. Either way, one has to declare that to the revenue. So self-employed, everything is done yourself. You have to work out the tax and pay that tax over. Something that crops up the most and is probably the most frustrating one for me, Jen, I don't know about you, is, as I've said, it is not the choice of the individual if you're an employee or you're self-employed. So let's use a scenario. You have a doctor who works for you. They're a salaried GP, Dr. Smith, and Dr. Smith works for you 4 sessions a week. And Dr. Smith has decided that they want to work an extra day a week, but they don't really want to commit to it. They don't want to change their contract, for example. So they've said to you, I want to do my additional day as a locum. And actually, my locum rate is slightly more than my salary GP rate. So when the accountant or me, Jen, whoever it is, comes at the end of the year, we can see Dr. Smith on the payroll and Dr. Smith as a locum. Dr. Smith can't be both. Dr. Smith is your employee, and he or she should be charging that extra day as overtime, and you should be putting it through the payroll as overtime, and it is taxable and it is pensionable, and it is not Dr. Smith's choice. Jen, you must see this all the time.
I see this all the time. I have, gosh, I think I've only had an email about it recently, and I always say to, because people say, but no, that they're doing an ad hoc locum session. I said, okay, I know they're doing an ad hoc locum session, but they're given that locum session because they are an employee. You know, you've got somebody who's employed on the payroll and you've gone, we've got an odd locum session, and they've gone, oh yeah, I'll take it. So I always say it has to go through the payroll, but I'm with you on this, Katie, is that so many of the locums go, oh no, just, I don't want it to be put on the payroll. Can you just pay me gross? And I think there is, you know, when we talk about employed and versus self-employed, I think one of the things that I'm saying to clients is, if somebody is working for you on a regular basis, week in, week out, doing the same sessions, they are an employee and they are salaried and they should be on the payroll. But I know I have lots of practices that say to me, we're looking for 4 regular sessions. We've got this locum that's come to us, but they don't want to go on the payroll. They want to be paid as a locum. And I always say to them, I said, but it's not their choice. It's not their choice. You're responsible for making sure that everybody you employ is employed correctly. And if that means that the nature of their role is that they're an employee, then they need to be on the payroll.
And actually, we're coming at this from a purely, I would say, a sort of tax perspective. But as all of our clients are doctors, there is an NHS pensions implication as well. So if you have an individual who wants to be, and I hate this term and sorry to have to say it, but long-term locum, there can be a significant impact on their pension. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you have salaried doctors, you have to put them on your PCSE online, you record their salary, and the monies are automatically deducted from your Exeter statement, whatever we call it now, NHS PCSE statement every month. Obviously, that's not the same case for locums. And we've had it multiple times, haven't we, Jen, where all of a sudden a client will contact us and say, I don't know what's gone on here. Our long-term locums just popped up on the document and they're being deducted at source. I say, yes, because the pensions agency has realised that they shouldn't be treated as a locum. They are essentially being treated for NHS pension purposes as an employee. And it can be very expensive. And so it's just something to consider. Yes, this is more tax related, but there are multiple reasons why you should be categorized as the correct identity, if you will.
Yeah, because if you're a long-term locum doing more than 6 months, then you would be kind of deemed to be a type 2 practitioner rather than a locum. So that sort of adds further complications. And I always say to practices, you know, if you've got like a GP on maternity leave and then you're taking on a locum to cover, say 6 months of that locum, and it is purely a short-term arrangement, then yes, they can be paid as a self-employed individual because they are just covering an absent GP. It's short term, there's not a commitment for long-term working arrangement. But I had a client who, I think they had a locum GP covering a maternity, and then at the end of the maternity, they said, oh, right, we're going to keep them. I said, well, okay, at this point, you need to now put them on the payroll, because they have gone from just being short-term locum cover for a maternity to actually being a regular GP working at your practice, doing same sessions week in, week out, then they have to be on the payroll.
And so even earlier when I said, when you're staff, it's very simple, you're on a payroll and you've got all these employee rights and you've got all of these essentially benefits, if you like, of being employed under the UK tax system. If you are self-employed, you don't have any of those. So what I mean by that is, you are not entitled to holiday pay. You're not entitled to sick pay. If you don't turn up to work, that's it. You're not paid. There is no employer, essentially. They have a contract, yes, but you're not paid. But it's more than that. So if you have a long-term locum, and I know that this sounds really cruel, but that long-term locum should not be attending your staff lunches when you put them on once a month. They shouldn't be attending your Christmas party, your summer party, any staff events. If you're doing any trivial benefits and you're, you know, giving Christmas vouchers or birthday vouchers, your long-term locums/locums should not be included in that. And I know when I say this to clients, they look at me and they think, what a cruel, evil accountant I've got. But we're not trying to be horrible. We hate it too. But unfortunately, the rules are the rules, and you are not allowed to do those things for individuals who are self-employed.
And I think if you end up doing those things, then you're at risk of HMRC coming along and going, well, actually, you paid them as self-employed, but they weren't self-employed. You know, they went to your Christmas party and you've given them this. And I always remember, Kate, seeing a client, it must have been 10, 15 years ago. And I don't know, I was looking at their website and they'd listed their long-term locum on their website as though they are a regular GP. And I said to them, you can't have this person on your website. You are literally saying they are a regular person that you can see. I said, because if HMRC see this, I said, that's not an ad hoc locum. You know, if you're going to be self-employed, it's got to be ad hoc work, i.e. you've got somebody that's going off on holiday, you need a locum to cover. Well, you wouldn't ever put that locum on your website. So I think there are a number of factors that you do need to be really careful of in determining, is this person truly self-employed? And if they are truly self-employed, they are working on an ad hoc basis. Short term, it will be, you know, a couple of weeks holiday cover, or they're doing three sessions for you for a couple of weeks holiday cover. And in 6 weeks' time, they come back and they do six sessions covering another doctor that's off on holiday. They shouldn't be doing, and I say this all the time to my clients, is I said, if they are doing the same sessions week in, week out, you've got a GP that does Monday and Tuesday all day, and they do that week in, week out, they are an employee, and that's what HMRC will look at. And Katie, we can talk about, I did actually have a HMRC POI investigation actually for two of my clients. So maybe we can chat through that at the end about what happened and the outcome of that.
Yeah.
And I always say to clients, I say, if you pay somebody as self-employed when they should have been on the payroll and HMRC investigate and they say this person is an employee, it's you who is liable for the tax, for the employer's national insurance, for all of it. And what they would do is they work out what is then due. And then there are now new legislations to say that they can take off any tax that that individual has paid. But what has not been paid is employer's NI. So you would be liable for all of that with interest and with penalties. So it's really important to get it right.
And the national insurance rate is now 15%.
Yes.
So it could be a significant amount of money if you've had a long-term locum for a number of years. And let's be honest, if they have been, you know, a 5, 6, 7 session locum, which I see this in practices, then we could be talking significant sums of money. And it's not something that we ever want our clients to be burned with, which is why we always tell you, you know, you shouldn't do this. You need to have this person employed. And I think actually, almost now in 2025, there is a bit of a changing attitude. Yes. So when all this arose and when the Check for Employment Status tool, which we'll talk about in a minute, came about, it was when locums were, let's be honest, sort of in charge.
And yes, I was going to say ruling the roost.
Yeah. You guys remember back, or I want to say it was pre-COVID-y time, probably.
I feel like it's really because of PCNs, things have changed in the last couple of years where locums are struggling to find work and now they want to be employed. You know, it suits them to be employed now and have the security. Whereas, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, they could choose where they wanted to work because everybody was desperate for GPs.
And it was a real struggle and practices couldn't employ, and so they had no choice. And that's when all of this sort of, it wasn't an issue before, but then it became a problem. And so hopefully now this is less of a problem than it used to be. But essentially we've covered sort of the difference between self-employed and employed. And I've said multiple times, or we've said multiple times, it's not a choice. You know, you either are or you aren't. So now we need to work out, well, how do I know? Well, the government have created a very specific tool, and it's called the Check for Employment Status for Tax tool, or we are just going to refer to it as CEST, C-E-S-T. So Check Employment Status for Tax, that's what the acronym stands for, which you should be completing essentially for every locum engagement. Now, I don't mean you need to do it every single time the same locum works, especially if they're working for you for a, you know, a 2 month cover or 2 month sickness cover, et cetera, et cetera. You just need to do it at the beginning of their engagement with you. And where you can find it, essentially, as one finds everything, Google it, and it will take you to the gov.uk. As long as it's a gov.uk website, you'll be fine. The gov.uk/guidance/check for employment status, and it will take you to the CEST tool. And it's very, very straightforward. You can do it as the employer. You can also do it as the individual if you are listening and you are somebody who is doing locum shifts and want to find out. Essentially, it's a number of questions. Some of them will come across as very unusual, but again, they're all for the government to work out, are you employed or are you self-employed? And some of the CESTOR questions, you may not be aware, obviously as an accountant, we are more so. Some of those questions, a yes, no answer is going to immediately trigger it. Where it gets a little bit grayer is some of the questions will be dependent on a situation and it may go either way.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you may do the CESTOR and it doesn't give you a definitive answer, or it could be a combination of questions that doesn't always throw out the same answer. It's quite an unusual tool. And especially this tool's been created, like with all tools and questions, they are just questions. With a doctor, we've got a bit of a nuance because you're offering, and this is the key one, a highly skilled service, which is different to a lot of individuals that would be doing this CESTOR. Because you are highly skilled, often highly skilled will come out automatically. Well, not automatically, but it will favor towards being self-employed. And so you have to be quite careful with how you answer some of the questions. And I have got some pointers later on about certain questions that might come up. Yeah. But essentially, the best advice we can give is complete the CESTOR for every engagement, print it out and annotate on it. Write on it, I answered this question because this is what this, you know. Then if you do ever have, as Jenny's alluded to, a PAY investigation, first thing they're going to ask is, do you have any self-employed staff? At least you can then present them with the proof that you've done the CESTOR, proof of how you got your answers. The more information you provide, let's be honest, the better chance you've got of being able to argue essentially that that individual is self-employed.
And HMRC do say that if you complete the CESTOR and if it gives you the result that they can be paid off payroll, i.e. they can be paid as self-employed, then they will stand by the result of the tool as long as you have answered it correctly. So like Katie says, I always say to all my clients, if you've got anybody that you're paying off payroll, i.e. self-employed, you need to have done the CESTOR.
And that's why, now we've mentioned this and we've mentioned the CESTOR, as you can imagine, the difficulty of having Dr. Smith, who we talked about earlier, your employee, trying to then complete the CESTOR for them. I believe one of the first few questions is this person an employee? So you've got to answer yes. And so, of course, this is why we say, please, please, please try not to have employees who work for you as a locum. Look, one shift a year might be okay, but we are talking about any kind of prolonged, even more than, oh, every other Friday, or they did it for the third Friday in a row. The third Friday in a row, you'd be looking at, nope, sorry, they need to do this as overtime now. Because with the CESTOR, they would fall down immediately as being not self-employed.
And I think with the CESTOR, I've had clients go to me, oh yeah, we're going to pay this locum. They've done the CESTOR and this is their answer. And I'm like, okay, but you need to do it from your point of view, because I think there are some questions that you can answer that will give you the result you want to give. Like there's a question in there that says, do you have to provide your own equipment for your role? So some locums will go, yeah, I do. I provide my stethoscope. But I go, but actually, you're walking into a consulting room that has your computer, that has your weighing scales, that has all the medical supplies that you need. I think that question, it's a great question.
It's a great question.
Because I think it is different to, say, a builder who has to provide all of their tools, all of the materials to do the job. Whereas I do feel with GP locums, you're not providing all of the equipment at that moment to see those patients. So I do think it's grey. So I think there are questions that you can make work. So I would always, like you say, Katie, strongly suggest that for anybody that's paid off payroll, you run the CESTOR. As Katie says, you print it out, you write the name of it, you write the date you're completing it, and you have it in your file so that you've got evidence if it gets questioned.
And you know your example earlier of your maternity locum.
Yeah.
Fine, there was no issue there. But we always recommend doing the CESTOR if a circumstance changed. So at that point, when the original doctor came back from maternity leave, yes, that doctor stayed on. That's when the CESTOR should have been redone because the circumstances have changed at that point. Then they're not covering a short-term contract. Then now they're in essentially an employee.
Agreed.
So this is why it's there. It's to protect them, of course, to protect the worker, but it's also to protect you as the employer, because as we said earlier, it's going to be very expensive if it's found that you should have employed them and you have to pay the tax and NI.
Yeah. And I was going to just say, we're talking obviously this about self-employed, but obviously there are still a lot of locums that work through limited companies, which fall under IR 35. Now, what I would say is for anybody that pays a locum through a limited company who is working for you on a regular basis, who is doing 4 or 5 sessions a week, and you're still paying them through their limited company, my first thought is they're caught by IR 35. They shouldn't be doing it through their company. I would say it's so important to do that CESS talk, because what they're saying is they can determine whether they fall inside or outside of IR 35. And I think anybody working through a limited company, it has to be on an ad hoc basis. That's fine. If your locum is just doing 2 weeks holiday cover and that's it, then yeah, absolutely, they can invoice via their limited company. But if they are doing 4 regular sessions week in, week out, and have been for the last 2 years, they cannot be working through their limited company. They are an employee and should be on the payroll. So I think that's really important.
And as a side note on that about limited companies, just as a reminder, this is completely separate, but if you are a GP partner, you are never to be able to do locum work through a limited company for your own practice. Just as a reminder, this is something really contentious that often comes up. If it was a completely separate thing, like, I don't know, research, fine, because you could argue that that's not the normal job that you do as a GP partner, but you cannot do locum shifts for your own practice. Well, you can't do them as a locum, as you know, they're extra sessions, but you cannot ever put them through a limited company. I just wanted to say that just as a reminder, since we were talking
about
it.
Absolutely, because do you know what? I was at practice last week and they asked me exactly the same thing, because I think the reality of it is there's accountants out there that are telling you, yeah, it's absolutely fine, but it is not fine. And if it gets investigated, it would even be seen down, I think, more sort of tax avoidance. You know, you're shifting partnership profits into a limited company to avoid paying the higher rates of tax on it. So, it's really frustrating, because there's lots of people out there going, yeah, you can do it, but you absolutely cannot. And if you actually followed the principles of completing the CESS tool, kind of one of the first questions kind of asks you is basically, are you one of the decision makers? And then as soon as you go, yes, I am, for the business, because you're a partner, you are, then it's straight away will go, oh, well, of course you're not off payroll. And of course you're not. You can't be paid through your limited company. Katie, sorry, should we also just, because I touched on some questions like the motor and the equipment can make a difference, but should we also just talk about substitution? Because one of the things that I do say to clients is for somebody to be truly self-employed, if they could provide a substitute, arguably an employee can't do that. So should we just have a quick chat about it?
Yeah. So years and years and years ago, we had like a very basic locum temporary contract that we used to sort of share with clients. Again, we are not HR based or consultants, so we don't have contracts. It's not our remit. We would always advise you to go to whoever you use as your HR to provide you with a robust self-employed contract, you know, for your locums, etc. And actually, going back to what Jen mentioned earlier, we're now suggesting that you consider putting, I know it sounds silly, but bringing your own stethoscope as part of your standard contract, because that is the, again, a bit with these questions, contention, that is the one that all doctors should be providing their own piece of equipment. You wouldn't use another doctor's stethoscope, you'd use your own. So just by putting a single sentence, we expect our self-employed locums to bring their own stethoscope, etc. So we used to have this clause in the standard, very bog standard, basic self-employment contract that had about substitutes. But actually, the NHS contract forbids the use of substitution. So you cannot say, yes, I'm going to provide a substitute if I'm off sick. You're not allowed to. And so there is one of the CESS tool questions that asks that question, which is why it's very difficult, because you can't answer it, because it doesn't apply. So again, it's niche. So where it says, can I provide a substitute? If you put no, it's automatically going to tick you as employed. So it's just, again, so that's where you might need to put no, but annotate it, or put yes, but annotate it, and say, however, the NHS contract forbids it, and therefore we are aware that there will be no substitute accepted.
And I think the reality of it is when you talk to people, and we used to sort of say, well, if they can provide a substitute, then yeah, you can be self, you know, they could be self-employed. But the reality of it is you can't in practice, because you book in patients for that GP. And what practices always say to me is they say, but we would want to know who the GP was that they were sending. Mm-hmm. You also can't send a GP as a substitute that works regularly for that practice anyway. So it is impossible for it to work practically in the NHS.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. But I can remember, you know, years ago going on tax courses when we used to talk about IR35 and employment versus self-employment. One of the things that the tax lecturer was always saying, you just need to provide a substitute once, and HMRC cannot challenge that, because an employee couldn't turn around and go, it's a nice sunny day, I don't want to come into work today, I'm sending so-and-so in my place. An employee can't do that. So that was always one of the main, if you could do that, that would always kind of point towards self-employment.
And one of the other key questions that comes up that throws individuals is, it's about the decision to choose how one works. So the job is set. The job is being a doctor. And so you don't have any necessary control over what you're doing. You've been told to do the job to see the patients by the practice that you're going to. So again, if you were to say, no, I don't have control over the work I'm doing, again, that would imply that you're an employee. However, because you are a highly skilled individual, this question actually becomes not applicable. So if you do see this question for those individuals filling it out, it's not applicable because it's highly skilled work. So this is why I say there's so many nuances with it, and it's such a difficult tool to complete. It's not been made easy for individuals. We're aware of that. But that is one to remember as well. I think they're really the two key ones. The substitutes, which is not applicable, which again, annotate. And the decision to work, although it feels like they're not having a choice to work, essentially because they're highly skilled by being a doctor, it's a moot point. It's a not applicable question. So they're the two that are really key when you yourselves are filling out the CES tool, but always annotate. Write the name of the locum, the date that you've completed it, just so you've got as much information as you can.
And Katie, I think we sort of said we would touch on sort of a couple of PMI investigations that I've had. So I had two practices, sorry, I'm just going to call up what it was called. So two practices had emails from HMRC, and then they were sent a compliance check questionnaire. So in the old days, in the good old days, you'd have an inspector would turn up at the door and say, I want to do a POI investigation. But instead, what you've got is, I had two practices that got this compliance check questionnaire. So it asks about, you know, how many employees you've got, who does your payroll. It would ask about, do you pay any expenses? Have you claimed any SMP? It asked about, do you have any employees below the national minimum wage? And then one of the other, the sort of the main question here was, how many workers are paid off payroll? So it says, for example, those classed as self-employed or paid via a personal managed service company. So I had two practices that got this. Now, one of my practices that got it, they are partner-based. They only ever really use locums for holiday cover. So they completed it, filled in all the details, and there was really no further action required. And then the other practice that had this questionnaire, they did have some regular locums. So when they sent it to me and they'd put down that they've got four people working off payroll, it asks for their name, it asks for their type of engagement, and it actually asked how much they'd been paid during that year. So when they contacted me about it, I said, oh, you're going to have a problem, because I just think these people are doing regular sessions. They're going to get caught. And I just gave them the heads up on it. Soon as they completed it and then they submitted it to HMRC, HMRC straight away just came back in a return email and said, for the people that were listed as off payroll, can you tell me what the nature of their work is and whether you completed a CES tool? So we went back, and one of the partners was on maternity. I think they actually had an admin member of staff that they had paid off payroll, which I would never, ever, ever sort of recommend. But actually that person got paid off payroll and then became an employee. So they kind of could put that. But we had to give a very detailed breakdown of the nature of the work. And again, try as best as we could to argue that it was more of a self-employed basis. And as part of the investigation, the inspector actually asked them, had they completed the CES tool, and they wanted a sample of invoices for two of the locums for 3 months. Fortunately for this client, actually, although they had sort of what seemed to be regular locums, they actually didn't invoice a regular amount, because actually their sessions changed from month to month. So because the amounts on the invoices were varied, to the inspector, it appeared that they actually weren't regular. So I do have clients where I've seen, you know, for 6 months, they're paying the same amount to a locum, mm-hmm. which is clearly regular locum sessions. But in this particular client's case, actually, although they had sort of regular people they were using, they weren't actually doing the same sessions every month. So every month, their invoice total was different. And as a result of that, and although I'd sort of forewarned the client to say, I'm worried about these people because you're paying them off payroll on a regular basis, actually the outcome of the inquiry was that the inspector was happy with the fact that they'd completed the CESS tool and it had given them an outcome to say they were self-employed, and also that actually their invoices that had been submitted and the information we'd put about the nature of their role, they were comfortable to say, yep, we're happy that these are self-employed individuals. Now that is probably quite a rare case, because quite often when I go to practices, as I said, I can see locums and they're paying the same amount per session. So I still think a standby that even if you've got a locum and they're doing four sessions week in, week out, their invoice total is going to be the same. They are doing regular sessions. They would be deemed to be an employee.
Agreed. And again, just for additional layer of protection, should these investigations occur, and actually we have found often the revenue will just pick a sector. And sometimes it is just, you know what, we're going to target GPs this year. It does happen. Because yours were quite close together, weren't they?
They were quite close together. They were quite close together. They were literally, I felt like sort of 6 months apart. I literally had two and I was like, oh gosh, are we going to start to see more of these? Touch wood, I haven't seen any more. And I don't know whether you haven't had any, have you, Katie?
It wasn't an HMRC compliance review. I had one of my clients had to do, it sounds like a similar thing, but it was for the ICB.
Okay.
So it wasn't for tax purposes, but it was for ICB purposes, but it was very similar questions that one would expect to be asked by a tax inspector. It was unusual. This practice, they actually don't use locums except for genuine ad hoc holiday and sickness cover. I think their locum bill is less than 300 quid a month or something. They're just, it's a heavily partner practice. So it was fine. It was a non-issue. But when I saw it, I thought, goodness, this is fine for this practice, obviously, but I've got other practices who I would think, there might be a situation here. And so when we say it to you, and often I'm asked, what are the risks? I say, well, the risk is that you get an investigation. Well, what if we never get an investigation? Well, that's the risk you take. It's a bit like insurance, isn't it? So ultimately, we are always going to tell you what the right thing to do is. We can't stop you employing somebody and then having them do a Friday as a locum, because we can't. And I know that there are times when you're under pressure, but we just want you to be as fully informed as possible. But also make sure in the practice that every member of staff knows who's an employee and who is a locum, because that is another key thing that came out of the CESS tool use, that there are often... it wasn't necessarily known who was self-employed and who wasn't. And that, again, makes it worse. So if you have a locum, but all of the admin team think they're a regular member of staff because they feature on your website, for example, that isn't going to be favourable if you're challenged on that individual. So just you know, these things, they might seem really basic and really simple, but they can make the difference to the tax charges.
I can remember a client getting a PRA investigation maybe like 22 years ago, where they had an inspector come in and they had an interview, and all they had was a locum GP do a Wednesday morning because they'd have a partners meeting. But the practice manager had said, no, they're a really important part of the team. And I read these notes from this meeting and they hadn't contacted us. And I just was like, oh my gosh, everything they've said implies that they are part and parcel of the organisation. And if you are self-employed, you're just literally popping in, doing a few sessions, coming away again. You're not a major part of the organisation. But yeah, as we've said, really key to make sure that you're employing staff on the right basis. And if you take anything away from this today, is you need to do the CESS tool for everybody off payroll. You know, we're kind of referring to GPs, but I've had practices say to me, oh yeah, we're paying our nurse off payroll. And I'm like, your nurse, you know, how many hours are they doing? You know, but anybody you're paying, complete the CESS tool.
Yeah. So whether it is locum admin or nurse locums, anyone who is just not wanting to go on your payroll, and again, I say not wanting to, that's kind of the first red flag in my opinion, because again, it's not their choice. It's the government's decision. And actually, one, I know it's difficult, especially with high salary rates at the moment and very high recommended pay rises at the moment. But for both sides, it is always better to have an employee, especially for the employee themselves. As I mentioned, they're protected. They get protective leave. They get protected holiday pay, sick pay, etc. I would always choose to be an employee over being self-employed in that situation. But I do understand the attitudes. But luckily, as we said earlier, they are changing a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So I think that's all we really needed to cover for today. I keep forgetting that we have show notes. So of course, I told you to Google the CES tool, but I'll put it in the show notes as well. And if you have enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to like and subscribe. And we look forward to seeing you next time. Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to RBP's Accountancy on Prescription podcast. For any updates, please visit www.rbp.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at RBPCA. The contents of this podcast is for general guidance and informational purposes only and does not constitute any form of advice. The information provided by RBP is of a general nature. Appropriate and tailored advice or independent research should be obtained before making any decisions. RBP does not accept any liability for any loss or damage which is incurred from you acting or not acting as a result of listening to Accountancy on Prescription.